Well, as you can hear in the background, the coughing and hacking, it's me, Fish and Frank. We're back. RJ in command and control. And it's the two of us. It's lonely in here.
It is. We're missing people. But you know what today is?
If you're lucky enough to be Irish, you're lucky enough.
That's right. It's St. Paddy's Day. So that means we have to start with an Irish fishing joke.
Okay.
Okay, so my cousins O'Toole and Murphy go bass fishing out on the lake, right?
Right.
And this bottle bumps up against the boat, and they pull the bottle up, and they pop the cork out, and a genie appears. And he says, boys, I'm going to grant you one wish today. And so O'Toole right away says, I wish this whole lake would turn into Guinness. And the genie says, done. And Murphy reaches over and smacks O'Toole, and O'Toole said, what'd you hit me for? He said, now we have to pee in the boat, you idiot.
Yep. You know, I did some research on that.
Yeah.
Because I'm theoretically one day getting a boat.
Theoretically.
And, you know, we still have visitation with it. But what happened was I didn't know what the laws were. Because if you're traveling on a boat, living on the boat, you know, for days, weeks, months at a time, it's illegal to dump holding tanks within like 25 miles of the shore or something like that. There's no place where you can dump a holding tank. But there are no laws against peeing over the side of a boat.
Really?
Nope. Not that I could find anywhere. I was like, huh. I would have thought, too. In this day and age, I mean, everybody's got a law for everything, so why wouldn't they have a law for that? But no, there are no statutes about urinating off a boat. I was quite surprised. So I wouldn't do it in a crowded party boat situation.
No, but probably not. Though it's been done, I'm sure.
I think they have indecent exposure laws for that stuff.
Right.
But the actual physical act, no problem. Everybody's fishing's getting a lot better. Fishing's picking up. And a lot better, I guess, is a fairly strong statement, but it's getting better. And people don't understand that when you have weeks and weeks of 1 to 2 fronts a day, or 1 to 2 fronts a week coming across, it shuts everything down. Because the air pressure affects the water pressure, which affects the swim bladder of a fish. So if a front goes through and we get a very strong low pressure front, any of the fish in 10 feet of water or less are very affected by that. And what it does to them is expand their swim bladder unnaturally. And so they have a hard time staying afloat or staying in place, chasing food, all this other kind of stuff. Really messes with them. And all of a sudden, we're getting much more stable weather. And while we're getting some fronts, they're not as severe as they were. And so the fish are feeling better. The water temperature's up a little bit. So a lot of cool things going on. We're seeing mackerel come back.
The jacks are back, I heard.
A lot of jacks around. They like this cooler weather in the winter. They just load up into the canals. Then they go out, feed, and then head back up in the canals. And the Peace River's got a big school of jacks working it. Punta Gorda canals, a lot of jacks over there. Some in the Port Charlotte side. It's really weird that while the canals are very similar, Punta Gorda Isles maintains a minimum depth than most of their canals. So they have a much higher fish population than we do in the Port Charlotte side, which they always talk about dredging. They talk about doing everything, but they never do anything. You know, it's they love the waterfront property because they get these huge tax bills for it. But there's no – if people knew how shallow a lot of the canals were, where they're spending $400,000, $500,000 for a house, and you can't get anything but a John boat or a very shallow draft flats boat up there, you know, they're thinking they're going to buy a cuddy cabin and go cruising. No.
No.
No, you can't get it behind your house. You know, you would just think somewhere in the taxes go up constantly. And it's marvels of government. I don't know what's going on.
Well, there's this inverse relationship between tax revenue and services, outgoing services. So the more they charge, the less they do, it seems.
All I can imagine is how beautiful states like New Jersey, New York, all these states up there, how amazing the roads would have are and how amazing the landscaping is and the litter pickup. And I mean, just it has to be gorgeous up there, because from people I talk to, they say their taxes are 4 or 5 times what ours are.
Yeah, you would think. Are you on the same planet that I'm on? I mean,
well, isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah, sure.
They pay a lot of extra money up there, so everything's a lot nicer.
Well, I rest my case on what I said. They spend all this money, and they're driving on gravel up there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you know, that's helpful information. I guess, yeah. I don't have to go up and look, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So, anyway, a lot of this comes down, and when it comes to the fishing, really am going to actively start pushing for a change in regulations. I'm sick and tired of the eco-idiots telling me we have to keep these big fish because they have more eggs. Now, in our listening audience out here, I would like, by a show of hands, each person out there that spawns as well as they did, if you're in your 60s or 70s, you spawn much better now than you did in your 20s. That, you think that's an accurate statement? I'm pretty sure it's the other way around.
I'm pretty sure,
yeah,
too.
I'm, yeah, pretty sure, by a show of hands, who spawns better now that they're in their 60s compared to when they were in their 20s?
And also, who's more likely to keel over in your 70s? I think the old Irish song, how does this go? The longer you live, the sooner you're going to die.
The longer you live, the sooner you're going to die. Yeah. Exactly. So my point of this is we need to change all these stupid slot regulations. This is dumb. This is banging your head against the wall. It started in 1988 with Earth 88. That's the first time they really came out with all this garbage. So 88, 98 is 10 years. 2008's 20 years. 2018, 30 years, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So 33, 34 years, whatever it's been, these idiots are spouting the same exact garbage over and over again. This is what our educational system has done. This is what they learned, so it has to be true. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's not working. Let's figure out the maximum size of a fish and put the slot limit just below that. Let's say 2-3 inches.
In a lot of states, Frank, that's the way it is. And you don't keep the smaller fish. You keep the bigger fish.
Why in Florida are we taking out the middle-aged, basically, if it was human terms, it would be the people – it would be –
the
we're
prime
allowed to
breeders.
Keep people from 20 to 35.
Right, exactly right.
But let's protect the 80-year-olds because, oh – they're so much better for population.
Well, that's the senior lobby down here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, that's true. So, but I just think it's funny. We need to change these rules and at least for 3 years go to high-end slot. Let's protect the younger, stronger ones, and let's go through and get the oldest, weakest ones.
Which should give you the better fillet anyway.
With some fish, it's going to be it would be a little harder. Like with black drum, the bigger, yeah, ones aren't quite as good as the 20-inchers. But I don't notice the difference when I get a 26, 28-inch trout compared to a 15-inch trout.
Right.
The fillet seems identical. With redfish, we couldn't do it because they don't live here. We would have to keep our same slot otherwise we would never be able to keep any redfish because the adults all leave and go traveling. Shocking how many fish do that. Pinfish grow up here, go out to the Gulf to spawn and live their lives as adult. Shrimp, tarpon, I mean, the list goes on and on. Really, the only fish that actually live in Charlotte Harbor are the Maharas, Silver Jennies, you know, same fish, bunch of names, the sand bream, and snook. Those are the only two. And now when snook get over 40 inches, they tend to go traveling and wandering. But, and let's put it from an economic standpoint. If we want people to come here and spend their money to go fishing and get hotels and, you know, hang out and do all that, I would much rather see them catching and releasing 39.5-inch snook all day or 39 3/4 because you can't keep anything under 40 rather than catch and releasing 25.5-inch fish. It's just, the other one's better.
Yeah.
I mean, from an economic and I believe an environmental standpoint.
Well, and you know from the store, when people come down from up north, they're totally flummoxed by these slots, you know. Well, you can only keep it if it's below this or above that or...
Yeah, less than or more than.
And you got to measure them to the fork or you got to measure them to the tip. You know, it gets really complicated. I think they should uncomplicate a lot of these rules.
Exactly.
And the way to get it done is not to listen to Frank and I bitch. It's to start writing letters, you know. Take a couple minutes and send an email to your local representative. Send an email to FWC and let them know how you feel because that's the only way it's going to change. Just bitching about it has never done anything.
No. That's why years ago people couldn't believe I actually went to work for the federal government, originally doing manatee signs and later all different kinds of stuff. But I was able, by getting in there, doing the work, learning the procedures, you know, spent my unpaid time going with them to see how they did stuff and why they were doing some of the crazy stuff they did. And I was able to make changes to their rule books. I was, you know, set new standards. I was able to get a lot of run zones for boaters. And because in my opinion, and the way I think is that, if you have two channels of water going from one body of water to another, if you make one slow no wake and the other run speed, where would the boats go? To the run speed one. Because people, I'm sorry, people don't want to break the law. Give them an option. So, oh. Boy.
Frank was using a pressure washer the other day. He's got a snoot full of something.
Oh. Yeah, I was pressure washing the side of the house, got done, and I must have got mold in my sinuses or something, and it's down in my throat trying to go to my lungs. I'm sitting, and usually this honey takes care of it right away, but not working. Anyway, always giving people the option to adhere to the law or not. And if all the boats are going one spot, it really makes the other spot much more of a sanctuary for wildlife because you're drastically reducing the number of boats that go into it.
That's right. That's what happens. The other way to get the government to listen, if you got a fishing club, you're a member of a fishing club, all you got to do is write one letter and have everybody sign it. And you'll have a pretty good impact that way, too. So you don't have to write 10,000 letters. You could.
And keep in mind, we don't need this as a law to change the slot limits to the high end. We need it as a temporary 3-year program and see if it makes a difference.
Yes.
Because I can't tell you with 100% certainty this is going to work. I can tell you with 100% certainty what we're doing now does not. So, if we know it's not working, why don't we try that? And if it doesn't work, then let's try something else. But it literally needs 3 years to find out because once you enact it, you've got to go through a spawning season, let those fish grow up. You know what I mean? It it's a 3-year minimum. It's like on the east side of the harbor, I would never want to see no motors, because everybody keeps talking about no motor zones in the Mica Cutoff, on the east side of the harbor, the west side of the harbor, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. And I tell them, oh, you love fishing Ding Darling, don't you? And they're like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And I'm like, well, you do know we have no motor zones in Charlotte Harbor. It's a very big area. You're not allowed to put electric motor there or gas motor there. I said, so you go to fish Ding Darling all the time, right? That's why you want no motor zone on the east side or no motor zone in the Mayaca Cutoff. And they're like, well, no, I don't. Where? I'm like, south end of the harbor. For over 20 years, we've had a no motor zone. It's also called the dead zone. No motor zones in the Keys, where you have to push, pull, paddle, they work great because they have a massive sheet flow of water going across it. So without boats running around on there, you get a better fish population. You know, they don't have to worry about the props going by their head, you know. It'd be like living outside of Chicago, you know, with the gunfire. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing for fish in shallow waters. And Tampa works great. Again, a massive opening to Tampa Bay where all that water goes flooding out. All that water comes flooding back in. They actually have a foot more tide each day than we do, and the Keys have about almost 2 foot more tides per day than we do. But we don't have the sheet flow for it. So all the stuff bunches up in there, it dies, it decays, it turns into a massive dead zone. But people don't ever want to hear that we've already tried it. So, you know, why go with historical fact when you can do imaginary future? So anyway, but we've got a few fishing lures here, and a couple of them that I brought in, RJ's going to be coming out with. It's a little different. And when you see there, what do you want to start with, RJ?
Oh, I want to go to the Johnson Minnow Spin. And having used MEP spinners most of my career, this one is really innovative. It is a minnow body,
mm-hmm,
with a minnow spin blade, and it's got a feather tail, a white feather tail.
Now, when I saw those, I was thinking of the same thing, the MEPS lures and rooster tails, all that kind of stuff. And believe it or not, rooster tails have gotten so stupid expensive, it's beyond belief.
Yes.
So I haven't bought the rooster tail just because I haven't been willing to pay the price for them. I was using the Rapala copy of those, and we were doing really good with them. Exact same lures. We could sell them a dollar cheaper and actually make more money. And when the store reopened, found out Rapala had canceled them.
Yeah.
And so Berkeley came out with these, and as far as an inline spinner go, I think it's a pretty good little product.
Well, having seen spinners underwater, especially the willow blade.
Right,
type,
that's what that has.
That's the willow blade. The cavitation around the spinner as it's going creates an air bubble, and the air bubble works like your mask underwater. It makes whatever's on the other side of it look much larger than it actually is. And so I'm assuming when I see this underwater, I'm going to see what appear, if I'm a fish, it's going to appear to be a much larger minnow than what this little guy is. I think it could be pretty effective, and I really like the colors on it. There's a lot of gold in that, a lot of shiny gold.
I'm a big rainbow trout guy.
Yes.
Okay, this is a rainbow trout color.
Yes.
And people always say, well, you know, why do you have so many rainbow trout lures here? I said, because of the color pattern. You've got some dark green or black. You've got spots. You've got pink, usually some yellow, blue. You have all these different color patterns. It's an awesome, forget that it's a freshwater fish. It's amazing colors. And when the water's a bit clear, And by clear, it can be brown, it can be blue, it can be whatever, but just not a lot of silt in it.
Yeah.
You know, can be tainted. Think of a cup of tea. It's not dirty water. It's not got a bunch of stuff floating in it. It's just brown.
Yeah, when you put tea in a glass, you can see through it.
Right. So this is when these colors really come to shine. Yeah. Literally amazing. And I was buying these because of the crappie fishermen, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is going to be awesome out over the reef.
Yes.
Because whether I'm in the near Gulf reefs or the Charlotte Harbor reef, this is going to catch spadefish, ladyfish, snappers, you name it. They're going to go crazy over this thing.
Yeah, and I think that the best way to work that, especially get up to a sandbar, would you be on the drop-off side of the sandbar, cast it up over the top of the sandbar and work it slowly coming back over the top into the drop-off, and I think that could be really effective. One, it makes noise. You know,
it's a very noisy bait.
Yeah, it's a noisy bait, and it's got the right colors in the process. I think, you know, I don't have to worry whether I get a pink one or a gold one or a silver one.
No.
All the colors are in that. So.
Yeah, okay. I found that so interesting, and I'm 100% positive it's going to be a great freshwater lure, whether you're doing Shell Creek, way up on the Peace River, up in here in Northport in the canals. That's going to be a great freshwater lure. That, I think, is a given. But I think it's going to be equally as well, you know, along the beaches or in the harbor.
The next one, and before I say what it is, a lot of lures are designed to hook fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
You walk into the store and you say, that looks cool, I got to have that.
Exactly.
Now, these
if you made the best lure in history, if you were decide to become a lure manufacturer, and you created a lure that every third cast would catch a fish, but no one ever bought one, was it a great lure?
Not from the standpoint of the guy selling it, no.
But what I'm saying is nobody ever bought one, so nobody else ever tried one.
Right.
So is it really a great lure if it doesn't catch fishermen?
Well, you know, that's what got a lot of people involved in the soft plastics is they looked really cool. They happened to catch fish, but they looked really cool, and people started
and they're inexpensive.
And they were inexpensive. So anyway, these are scum frog. And when you see scum frog, you say, what the hell is that?
I guess so.
What fish is going to eat this thing? It's white. It's not shaped like anything. Well, kind of reminiscent of what a frog might look like in a LSD dream or something like that. But
now, the reason for the name is in a lot of freshwater ponds and stuff, when you have grass and weeds and lily pads and cattails and all this stuff around the edges, what is also in there? Usually some floating algae scum stuff.
Duckweed, yeah, all that stuff.
And this is made to float. It does not sink. It's a you can take one out of the package. They're all the same. They squeeze it. Just be careful of the hook. It's got a double hook on it.
Yep.
But you see how it squeezes? It's full of air.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing about this, it floats right on the top, and you can bring it across the lily pads, through the scum. It's pretty much weedless.
Yeah, the hooks point up.
So it's a really good one to get in that medium to light cover where the fish are going to hang out underneath it. And I decided to bring those in. I probably should have waited a few weeks because it's not really hot enough for that right now. The fish are still kind of in the sun, in the shade a little bit. But in the next month, that sun's going to get cooking. So when you're out fishing, if you're standing there and you go, boy, I'd like to go stand under a tree. I wish I was in the shade. So would the fish. So this provides excellent opportunity to get those fish without having to rip out a lot of weeds and all that kind of stuff because you're literally casting on top of them.
And there's actually four models, but I'm going to look at the little
What's
big
the difference in the four?
Color.
Possibly. Okay. We're going to call color. First good answer.
Color and
second. Second good answer.
The other one's got a popper face to it.
Second good answer. You got popper and three just kind of jerk twitch baits.
Yeah.
What's the next difference? It's subtle.
Yeah. Well, he's got a hula skirt.
Not only a hula skirt. What do the other ones have?
One of them has side skirts, and the other one has little froggy feet.
So one has paddle tail feet. The other has a skirt split into two, more representative of legs.
And I think those will stand out sideways from the lure on the water.
Right.
Giving a much bigger signature on the water.
And then you have the one where the skirt is all in one and just flows directly behind it. So you have several different types of lures there, even though they're all basically the same thing.
Yeah, basically. And you know, if I was going to buy one of them, I would probably buy the popping face because that gives you that extra noise up on the top. You know, you're up in the scum,
mm-hmm.
and maybe or maybe not the fish can see it. It kind of knows where it is if it makes noise and it vibrates a little bit. So the popper really would, to me, would be bringing them out. The mouse nose one, and that one almost looks like a mouse, it's called the scum frog. That would probably slip through the
stuff. Is
that
one of the rats?
Yeah, it looks like the rat. Yeah. And they tell you on the back, it says, when a fish strikes, wait 2 seconds before you set the hook.
Most people pop them out of the fish's mouth.
Right, right.
Now, the one thing to successfully use these are a soft plastic hollow body lure, twin hooks that come up, but you're throwing them on top of a lot of weeds. So that plastic, while it's smooth, is a bit sticky. If they were out of the package and you tried to rub it on your desk, you'd find it would catch a bit, which a little bit of that is nice because it moves the weeds and lets the fish know something's moving around up on top of those weeds. And whenever I get between like a couple of lily pads or a clump of weeds to another clump of weeds, I always let it sit for a minute. And if I can get my line tight and just shake the end of the rod just to make it shake in the water, movement without forward motion, it's great. But most of the time what I end up doing, and it's one of the instances where I use a lot of these bass sprays, I'll either use WD-40, which is fish oil, and or like anise oil scents, garlic, anything with an oil base on it, because I'm spraying that lure to make it slide easier through the weeds. They don't stick to the lily pad as much. You can get a much more natural presentation. You don't want to use too much because I want it to stick to the weeds a little bit so they move and tell the fish, oh, there he is right there. It's that weed's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And he can see it come off, go into the water to go to the next one, and they'll hit if it's too slick. But there's a fine line between too slick and not slick enough. And so it's getting that kind of figured out. So it's not spraying them every time, but it's learning, according to the weeds, how rough they are and all that, how often do I spray it? Could be every cast. Usually it's every 5 to 10 cast. And it's a very, very slow procedure with these because that fish is laying up in the weeds underneath it. Now, he's going to sense the vibration first of it moving across the weeds, then maybe a little bit of noise like you're going to use that popper. So every time you hit open water with it, you're going to get your rod tip real low and give it a good smack, let it pop real good. But a lot of it's just seeing the movement, you know, skitching from one to another. And you got to let it sit. If you picture in your head a frog, you know, you see plenty of videos of frogs where they kind of go moving around and they move, and then they just stop and kind of hang out there for a while. You know, their feet are down, their legs are up, and they're just kind of hanging out. Then all of a sudden they move a bunch more. That's what you got to have in your head when you're working one of those. Now, which one of those would make the best snook lure?
You know, I would probably go with Little Bigfoot.
Is it the one with the paddle tail feet?
Paddle tail, yeah.
That's exactly the one we throw for snook.
You throw these for snook?
100%.
Wow.
Now, you're fishing snook up by the mangroves, and you got one of those days where you've got a lot of the seaweed floating around, which is coming up almost any time now.
Right.
Because over the winter, we've had a lot of grasses die, and a lot of the stuff is going to start decaying and floating to the top. It almost looks like sewage, but it happens every year. It's just plant material floating up and going out of here. In areas where you have a no motor zone, there's no cuts to go through, so it just kind of hangs in there, falls, decays, sucks all the oxygen out, everything dies. But with that stuff floating around, you got a lot of seaweed, floating stuff. You can pitch that under the mangroves, and unless you wrap a branch, you're not getting snagged up. And now you start sketching it out a little bit, 4 to 6 inch pulls, and then stop. 1,001, 1,002. If you can see the bait good, wait for the ring to dissipate at least half to three quarters of the height when you see the splash created by your jerking it. Let that dissipate and then work it again a little bit. But those little feet going ta 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 on the surface makes those snook nuts. They love those things.
Well, this one's going to go in my tackle box at some point. That's pretty cool.
It's great on bass. And the truth is, 99% of anything a bass would eat, a snook would eat. But the one with the paddle tail feet, to me, it's always done better where I'm not sketching it through lily pads and heavy cover, moderate cover, where I'm pitching it under the mangroves and I'm dealing with a lot of seaweed and stuff. But basically, I just want to get over that. But I also spray it at that point because I don't want that stuff sticking to the lure. So I'll use whatever kind of oil-based fish scent, garlic, anise, fish, doesn't matter to me, or WD-40. And I'll just spray a little bit so it doesn't stick.
I think this would probably do really well in the canals also, pitching it underneath the tree branches and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Anywhere where you're worried about a lure getting hung up or you have a lot of stuff in the water that makes, you know, when you're throwing a crankbait or even a jerkbait and it's always just full of grass when you bring it back in,
yeah,
fish aren't going to hit it.
And these hooks are well protected within that soft air-filled body.
But
they're not
oil
sticking up
makes
at
a
all.
Big difference.
Yeah.
The oil makes a big difference.
Wow, that is really cool. I have no idea you could use a frog-type lure to catch snook. But then again, you know, snook are going up in the fresh water and eating all kinds of stuff. And when they're babies, they're eating all kinds of little stuff. So,
well, I'm not sure it presents as a frog. It could be like a fish going across. But snook eat ducks. They eat,
yes.
You know, you name it. If they can fit it in their mouth, they're going to try and swallow it. Real-life nature is not a Disney movie. Basic rule of thumb in the world is if it's bigger than you, you run from it. If it's smaller than you, you try to eat it.
Yes.
And that's where this comes into. It's just but it's a great lure. Scum frogs are awesome. Great company, too.
Yeah, I'm very interested. Like I said, this is not a lure that you will pick off if you haven't seen it before and you don't know about it. You're not going to pick it off the rack. It
doesn't look like... And if I was snook fishing, I would never pick it.
Never pick it, but good information. All right, the next thing we have are Rockport Rattlers.
Now, I brought those, and you see the packs of Berkeley there?
Yes.
Okay, the Berkeley and the Rockport Rattler have one awesome thing in common. I'm going to give you a second to look by just reminding people, if I didn't know what I was looking at, I would never pick a scum frog for snook fishing, but I use them snook fishing. It's an awesome bait for anything that eats a topwater with the little paddle tail feet on it. And you'll see it when you go into a store and you look around, you go, okay, that one's got, you know, the ribbon tail, this or the sliced skirt, skirt, and this one has little feet on it. And those little feet just seem to be what helps attract them. Now, what did you notice is how are they the same? We're going to go Sesame Street on your ass. What's the thing the Rockport Rattler and the Berkeley have in common? And it's almost unheard of in the industry. Now, look at the top right-hand side of the package on the Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it say in the top right?
Quarter inch.
quarter ounce.
Quarter ounce, right.
What does it say in the bottom right?
2-0 hook.
All right. What does the other Berkeley package say?
3-0.
So, now look on the Rockport Rattler up in the middle on the top, and what's the weight to those?
Quarter ounce and an eighth ounce.
Okay. And what's the hook sizes?
2-0 and 3-0.
So both of these not only come in different colors, different weights, but different hook sizes. And there's a formula that it's really basic and simple. You have the mouth of the fish, you have your hook, and you have your bait. The hook is always the middle one. So, here I have the mouth of the fish. My first concern is, will that hook actually go into the mouth of the fish? Snook, redfish, grouper, doesn't matter. But let's get into snapper, sheephead, so many other fish that if you're using a great big hook, that hook literally will not fit in the mouth of that fish. With a snook, you know, you can use a 6-aught, 8-aught. They got a great big mouth. The whole thing opens up. So it's not that much of a concern how big the hook is. But if we're doing sheephead, picture the mouth size of a sheephead. So you're probably going to be using a 4, a 2, or a 1 size hook, something smaller. Then where the bait comes into, if I have a great big piece of bait with a little tiny hook and then a big mouth on a fish, I'm probably not going to get a hook up. They can just pull it off the hook. But if I get a great big hook and a little tiny piece of bait, why wouldn't they just eat the bait off of the hook? Why would they actually bite it? You know, a big chunk of metal there, that's hard. You know, picture in natural terms, it's like a giant bone sticking out.
Right.
Why would a fish want to do that? They're not dogs. They don't want to chew on that. They're looking for the meat. So if you've got the exact middle of the hook world, what medium is defined at is a 1 or a 1/0 1-aught hook. Those are the center. That's the middle of the hook world. So with a number one hook, I'm going to have about a choice shrimp on there or a piece of bait appropriate to the size of that, and then matching that to the mouth of the fish. But with those, now Rockport Rattler, number one, hands down, better than anything when you're putting bait with it, like shrimp, squid, pieces of fish, any type of bait. I want the Rockport Rattler jig head.
And here's what the fish hear.
Can you hear it? No. I'm deaf. I can't hear anything.
Yeah, no, it's going across. All right.
Okay. So what happens is it has a glass rattle in it with small BBs. And when you put your natural bait on there, live shrimp, live pinfish, dead stuff, whatever, and you're going to move it, don't sideways your rod and pull it. Take your rod and lift sharply up in the air. That engages the rattle. You get this ch-ch sound. And that little ch-ch, little rattle up, rattle down, that makes all the difference in the world. Because if they don't notice it just sitting there and they're not doing the smell and all of a sudden they hear that and they're like, oh my God, what's that? And if you're using a jig head instead of a hook, leader, and sinker, Rockport Rattler is 100% the way to go. Now, what's the difference when you look at the Berkeley versus the Rockport Rattler if we're thinking in terms of soft plastic like paddle tails, jerk baits, curl tails?
The Rockport Rattler's got a single little barb, from what I can see in the package, that's going to hold the bait on there in addition to the fish. The Berkeley's got those three cones plus another little stick sticking up,
right,
which will really hold the plastics on much better.
Now, you're 100% right on the money, excluding for the fact when you look at the Rockport Rattler, on the shank you see that big glass rattle, and it's huge.
Yes.
Getting a shad tail or curl tail over that huge
good
rattle,
point. Good point.
You're going to rip the hell out of your baits. I have a little tool at the store, and it's a little file that I can put in the baits and use that to make a starter hole to open it up. I forgot to bring it because you would have got a kick out of that. I'll bring it on one of the next shows. But the Rockport is so hard to get into most soft plastics because of that big, giant rattle. Where the Berkeley is much more symmetrical, you can push that plastic over it, and you can see how it would give a good grip to the plastic, hold it in place.
Yeah, and it's nowhere near as big as the Rockport's body is. So.
And that was one of the reasons I brought both of them. Right now, they're the only two that have multiple weights, multiple colors, and multiple size hooks. So you can get much closer to what you need to have.
Yeah, I would think you would have to have both of these in your tackle box, depending on what you're doing.
See, now the
heads are shaped different also. The Berkeley is more like a fish shape.
I don't remember.
More like, gotcha.
Yeah, more minnow head.
Right, more minnow head, where the Rockport Rattler has got this alien type. What's it called?
Bullet head.
A bullet head, yeah. It's got a bullet head on it. And I think that's going to make a difference how they go through the water anyway, you know, when you're moving them along. And also how it's going to sit when you rest it on the bottom.
Actually, I didn't think about that, but, yeah, that's actually true.
I think that the Rockport's going to present the hook more vertical when it comes to the bottom, and the Berkeley is going to kind of lay on the bottom.
Probably. But I was just... To me, when you're looking at it, and what we're trying to do here is so when you're in the tackle store and you're looking at this stuff, trying to get you to see, what we think when we do these, why I would pick one to do one thing, why I would pick the other to do the other, what's the benefits of these, not just, oh, give me a Rockport Rattler because I hear they're great. I want you to know why.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the most important thing we can do, is get you to expand your thinking on this. With the scum frogs, there's four lures, but they're all four different, even though they all look alike.
And ugly they look.
Ugly they are. So what do we got next?
Okay, we got the VMC Tournament Circle, the Bylock Bait Stopper.
What do you think I bought that hook for? What do you think the... There's a specific thing. If you look on the back, it's probably easier to see. I bought that for one specific purpose, really. I mean, I didn't... Yeah, it's good for grouper and all this, but there's one fish, one type of bait, this is going to be awesome for.
I'm thinking redfish, but...
Tarpon. The reason being...
Yes.
See the little stopper on it?
Yep.
The number one reason people don't hook up. Now, you get thread fins for tarpon bait that are as big as your hand. Okay? So we're talking 5 to 10 inch bait fish, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches tall. And when you go to put it on, when you're using this big 7-aught, 8-aught hook, 6-aught, and especially circle hooks, because you have to have a big enough hook where it can actually go around all that cartilage in his jaw and everywhere else. If the gap is too small, it just falls right out. So you need a big gap on there. But what always happens when you have a live thread fin, the hook rolls around and comes back, and the point sticks in the head of the bait fish. So you got the point of the hook stuck in the skull of the bait fish because it slid up, the hook rotated, and came back and stuck the bait. So you go to set up on the fish, and he's got a hold of the bait, but no hook point. So the hook never gets stuck on the bait or into the fish. It just flies out. If the point of the hook isn't stuck into the bait fish itself, it can have a purchase in the fish. So you actually hook the fish, not the bait fish. That little stopper on there keeps the bait from going on too far, so it cannot hook itself. It's a stopper to keep the bait fish in the first part of it.
From getting up to the eye of the hook.
Where it would turn
exact
around.
Exact opposite of what you would think.
Yeah. So what you want is that bait fish in that first part of the hook where he can't hook himself. And so that hook, I bought thread fins in mine, basically tarpon, because it's a big hook. If it was a four aught or something, you could use it for snook and redfish. And it would be awesome for all that with greenbacks or thread fins on that bait fish. But that hook, that size, it's what, a 7-aught, 6-aught?
7-aught, yeah.
7-aught. That's a tarpon hook. And it's amazing. Now, if I was out in the Gulf of Mexico drifting for king mackerel, and I had a nice little blue runner on or thread fins or something, that would be an awesome hook for that because you got the rod and the rod holder, the bait out there running around, and nothing worse than waiting for that stupid fish to finally hit, and you get back and you've got the point of the hook stuffed into the head of the fish and you lost – stuffed into the head of the bait and you lost your fish.
Right. The other thing that's interesting about the VMC is the very tip of the hook is pointed directly at the shaft. It's almost like it's bent over.
Circle hook.
Circle hook, yeah. And so you get that drag pull.
What it's for, when circle hooks were designed, fish don't eat by – picture the fish moving forward, closing his mouth, and then stopping. That's not how fish typically eat. When fish eat, they come up and they swipe at it, and it's a turning motion. Because fish don't want to swallow anything tail first. The fins would stick in their throat. They want to swallow head first where the fish is streamlined. So when they go to attack a bait, they do it in a curving motion to grab it head first, be able to swallow it head first. When that bait goes down into the fish's throat, the point of the hook is bent back so it slides up, and then where the eye is, it pulls it back towards you as you tighten the line, and it hooks it in the corner of the mouth. It comes up and just catches as it the fish is turning. If a fish hit straight and came back straight, a circle hook would not work at all. It relies on the fact that fish are making a side swiping motion, swirling on a bait. That's what it takes to get a circle hook to set. And that's the way fish usually hit.
Okay.
The
gizmo department. This is one of my favorite. I'm going to head to the store and buy one of these because it's perfect for the little kit that I keep in the back of the van. You know, small belly.
Mm-hmm.
Belly pouch with a couple of lures in it and a couple of tools, and this would fit perfect. This is the mini hook remover. It's made by Rapala, and it's, what, about as big as your hand.
Yep.
And it's got a low side and a high side, and Frank demonstrated on a paperclip for me. When you go to pull the hook out, it actually rolls the hook out and out of the way.
Well, see if you can find the one I did, and see if you can guess which side you have to load. It's very specific. When you have, you've got a little hook that comes out from the center of a tube. And when you put it in there, see, now you're using it as a gripper. But now, as you put it in, all right, put the flat part towards you. Towards the thing. Keep going. Roll it more. All right, now grab the hook. See, it's starting to turn back. Now work it right down to the curve of the hook. And you'll see starting. No? Yeah, that way. Because that's where the fish is hooked with. See how it twisted it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's getting the shank of the hook to go on the side that has the lowest cut. And that rolls it backwards so you can pull
it out of
the
fish's
mouth.
See, I was doing it backwards. Now that I've done it right, it does it automatically. It just spins that hook right around.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's cool.
I have a larger version of that, and the original ones were awesome, stainless steel. They really lasted forever. Baker is the only one making it right now. They copied it somehow and put out a less expensive version, and people quit buying the expensive one, which was twice as good. Mm. It was only about $10 more, but it literally was amazing piece of tackle that lasted for 10 years.
Yeah, this is the 6-inch version.
Now, I like that one because one of the shows I went in told Rapala, they were talking about this. I said, well, when you fix your hook removers, I'll talk to you about it. I said, but, you know, how am I going to tell somebody to buy these tools when they don't do what they're supposed to do? And this was a guy at the time running Rapala. And he's like, what do you mean our tools? I said, they don't work. I said, you got the best pliers in the business. Nobody's even close. But your hook removers, they suck on a stick. They don't do what they're supposed to. And he looked at me, and I went over, got one, and I showed him the bevel wasn't enough bevel to make it actually work. And I showed it to him, and I'll give him credit. It didn't even take him within a year. They were fixed. Once they knew they had a problem, they just didn't know they had a problem.
Well, you know, there's a lot of great little tools out there. This is definitely one of them. I mean, we're not promoting products here. We're just telling you what we know, what we've seen, what works.
No, I'm promoting stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything to gain or lose except sales. But I can tell you, I have several I wouldn't bother to. And people come in and they ask me, what do you think of this one?
I bought a cheap hook remover. You know, it's the long, long barrel to keep your hand away from the big fish's mouth with the little trigger on the bottom. Doesn't work.
It kind of looks like a pistol grip.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the problem with those is
they get a good hold at a hook, but now what do you do that you got a good hold at a hook? Now
they're okay on panfish and stuff, but they're not designed for heavier fish like a
bull shark,
snook or a redfish or a little shark or somewhere where you actually have a hardcore hook. Those little hookout things were designed for wire hooks. That's why they worked okay on walleye and stuff, because you use a bent wire hook on these fish. You don't use a forged hook. And so in a combination of the turning of that hookout thing and the wire giving, that's what made them work. But they don't work well in saltwater at all.
Okay, well, we're getting real close to wrap up here, Frank. Anything else you want to say? What's going on with fishing this weekend?
For as far as fishing goes, go to fishinfranks.com. And remember, Northerners go fishing. We go fishin. fishinfranks.com. Type in fishin, hit the space bar. We'll already be there. But go to the website, click fishing report. And we just got done doing a whole new report. It's the whole area on there. And if you want to, you can listen to the podcast and ask yourself which one would have more information, the one that's typed out or the one that they're talking about it. While they're typing it out, they're talking about the different fish and what's going on. So you can listen to it because it follows it exactly, because that's where they got the typed version from, the one they were talking on. So that's fishinfranks.com, fishing report, or the radio fishing page to listen to it. Ah, and we're going to go fish, fish.
Fish, fish.
Fish, fish, fishing.
See you next week.
This is Fish and Frank, and that's RJ. We're this week in fishing.